From WBUR Boston, I'm Anthony Brooks, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Sonia Kitchell's voice and songwriting evoke a depth and wisdom far beyond her years. She summons a style of a time gone by, meandering between 60s folk, jazz, soul, and the blues. Critics compare her to the likes of Joni Mitchell, Carole King, and with some of the great blues and jazz singers from Ella Fitzgerald to Van Morrison to Joan Armatrading. Kitchell has already performed with people like Herbie Hancock, recorded her first CD, appeared on The Letterman Show, and is generating a lot of buzz. Not bad for a 17-year-old. Today, Sonia Kitchell is here with us live in the studio to talk about her work and to sing.
You hold me down, please, and let me go. I'm dying to be out on my own, and I think I might go crazy if this lasts any longer. You tell me this and you tell me that. I'm trying to tell you where I'm at, and I think I might go crazy if this lasts any longer. You know you got to let me go. 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 You gotta let me go. I'm just trying to let you know, so please let me go. But
that was singer-songwriter Sonia Kitchell performing live here in the On Point Studios the song Let Me Go off her debut album, Words Come Back to Me. What and who do you hear in the songs and sounds of Sonia Kitchell? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. What do you think of this 17-year-old singer-songwriting phenom? Sonia Kitchell joins me this hour. She's been touring around the country with the release of her debut album, and also joining us is bandmate John Shannon, who is on 12-string acoustic guitar. Sonia, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks so much.
What a pleasure. And here's what I want to say about what you just did. Wow. That was really, really something. Where do you muster that passion, that mature sound of soulful energy? And I'm getting at your age. I know you answered a lot of questions about this, but it's so deep and it sounds so mature. I just want to know where that comes from.
I honestly have no idea. And I couldn't really try to explain it if I wanted to. It comes from somewhere.
It sure does. Well, let's talk about where you come from. You come from Western Massachusetts, not too far from these studios. Tell me about your family, how they influenced your writing and your singing.
Well, I do live in Massachusetts, and I live in the country up in the western part, and my family is a family of artists. My parents are both. My dad's a painter, and my mom's an illustrator, and we live in this property that's in the woods. So it's really this beautiful, peaceful place. And we've got a lot of architects in the family. So it's a really interesting house with lots of light because my dad designed it. And I think as a result of where I grew up and who I grew up around, I really appreciate beauty. And that's something that, a lot of my songs are about human emotions and these things that we feel, and sorrow and pain and love and joy. But then there's also this part of me that really wants to paint these pictures for people, because there's so many incredibly stunning things out there in the world. And I just want to sing about them.
Mm. That song you just sang, Let Me Go, tell me about that song. What were you singing about? I mean, I guess at first blush, a listener thinks you're talking about, to a difficult relationship with a lover. Let me go. What was that about?
Well, I wish it was a difficult relationship with a lover, but it was more me becoming a teenager and thinking that the only way my parents would listen to me is if I wrote a song. So that's what I did.
So that was sort of an appeal to them. I love you, I need you, but I got to get out on my own and do this thing.
Yeah, it's pretty much, I try to talk about it as, it's like this universal relationship taking off song. I don't know, whatever you want to call it, but it's this separation, and that's what I needed. And we all need that from different people and at different times in our life. So I tried to make it so everybody could relate to it.
Mm. And what's been their response to your takeoff as expressed in this song? I mean, I assume they're supportive, but, how do they feel about what you're doing?
Well, my parents are very, very supportive, and they're ex-hippies, so they're pretty lax about things, and they love the fact that I'm out on the road and that I'm playing music. And it was never a rebellion for me to be a musician, because it's a bunch of artists. And my little brother, misses me when I'm out on the road, and I miss him, definitely. But I'm very fortunate in that I have a lot of support from home.
Hmm. Speaking of your little brother, I read, I think, 11 years old, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And he has aspirations to become your manager.
Yes, Max.
How do you feel about that?
Well, if you meet Max ever, anybody who meets Max, you kind of smile when you think about him, because he is so, it's really hard to, he's such a great character. He's just very on top of everything. And we'll come into a club and there's all these musicians who are in their 20s, 30s, 50s, 60s, whatever. And he has kind of owns the room. He knows where everything is. He'll give you the passwords. He'll make sure people get backstage. He just loves to be in control of all of that. So he told me that he's going to be a lawyer, and I'm going to pay for his law school.
I see. And then he'll use that expertise to turn you into an even bigger phenomenon.
Yeah, for his benefit, of course.
That sounds great. I'd love to talk to you about your influences, because as we've already referred to a number of times, and you said you're the daughter of hippies, and a lot of the music that you evoke is music of their generation.
Yes.
Did you grow up hearing that, and who were the people that you think sort of you absorbed?
I did grow up hearing it, and I think I kind of wish I was alive in the 60s, because I love the music from the 60s and the 70s, and I love the vibe of that whole time. And I grew up listening to Miles Davis and Bonnie Raitt and Joni Mitchell, and actually the Beatles didn't come until later. I remember I didn't actually grow up listening to the Beatles, and then when someone was over at our house and they're like, so she listened to the Beatles, and my parents were like, no, we actually haven't, and then that completely changed my life. And I just, you know, grew up listening to jazz and classical and rock and reggae and all sorts of, you know.
We're talking this hour with singer and songwriter Sonia Kitchell. You can join the conversation. What do you hear in her songs? Is she a refreshing, spacious alternative to the overproduced songs of today? Does she remind you of a musical time gone by? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We'll go out of this segment with the song Simple Melody off of Sonia Kitchell's debut album, Words Come Back to Me. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point. We'll be back after a short break.
Some would say it's quiet now, but I hear silence and it breathes. Lately, all I wanna do is sing la-da-da-da. All that I need, just a simple melody to set my soul free. For without it, I can hardly breathe.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour with singer-songwriter Sonia Kitchell. Her debut album is called Words Came Back to Me.
I'd love you if you wanted me to, but you seem so unsure. I'd love you if you wanted me to. Tell me, honey, what I'm waiting for. Oh, I feel like I'm a puppet dangling on a string, and I hate the way that you can make me do anything.
And we're listening to the song I'd Love You from Sonia Kitchell's new album Words Came Back to Me. Sonia is joining me this hour in the studio. She's playing for us live, and she'd like to talk to you. You can join the conversation. What do you hear in her music? What does it remind you of? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Sonia, I wanted to sort of continue this conversation about your influences and the fact that you're so drawn to this music from the 60s. What do you think of contemporary pop music and the kind of music that your contemporaries spend a lot of time listening to?
Well, a lot of it is great. You know, there's a lot of good music out there right now. But I think the problem that I have with most of it is that I do think it's a bit overproduced. Mm. And that's something that I like about older music, is I feel like there's more space in it, and there's more room for the songs to breathe, and it's more about the songs. And now, I wouldn't say it's less about the songs, but it's more about perhaps the production or this or that, and it just really doesn't appeal to me as much.
Mm. You started writing songs at a young age, and I'd love to hear the story about the first song that you ever wrote.
Well, the first song that I ever wrote that I played with other musicians and that I recorded was a song called If I Cried, and I wrote that on September 11th. And
go ahead. I was just trying to do the math. How old were you on September 11th when you wrote that song?
I was 12.
Uh-huh.
And the thing about that day was, for some reason, that day kind of triggered something in me where I just, and it's been happening ever since, but it was this need to reach out and kind of help in some way. And the only way that I felt like I could say something or do something was writing a song and singing it, and hopefully that would comfort people. And so I recorded it, and that song started everything for me, which is very ironic.
Hmm. What does the process of writing a song do for you? I mean, is it cathartic? Does it come easily, for example?
It comes very easily. Sometimes it's not enjoyable, which is funny. Sometimes I get this need to write, and it's like I just have to write a song. And so sometimes I won't write a song for a week or two, and then I just gets this pent-up feeling. And so then all of a sudden I sit, I'm like, I have to write a song, so I go wherever I am, and I sit down, and I pick up my guitar, and I start writing something. And sometimes something will come to me, but I don't really want to be writing anything at that point, and I force myself to sit there and finish it. Mm. And then when I'm done, I feel better, and then three more songs come out, and it's great. And those ones are easy. Mm. But it's usually that first one, it's this very interesting cycle I've, and it's definitely a cycle that I have. Like, I wrote a song yesterday, and so probably today and tomorrow I'll write some songs.
Wow. So you wrote a song yesterday, because that was sort of leads into my the next thing I wanted to ask you. It sounds like they happen fast. I mean, that you don't spend a lot of time.
No,
you don't need to spend a lot of time.
They happen within an hour.
Wow.
or a half hour. They just come out.
A fast writer. If for some reason, and I don't think this will happen, but if for some reason, if this music thing doesn't work out for you, you could work in broadcast journalism. We need people who can write really fast.
Hmm.
Who are you writing for? I mean, do you have an idea who's listening to your songs, and are you writing to a particular audience when that
No, happens? I mean, I'm just writing for people and for myself, and sometimes I'm just writing for myself, and sometimes I'm writing for others. It really depends.
Let's take a call or two and then have you play a little bit more. Let's go to Seth, who's calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Hi, Seth.
Hey, how you doing?
Very well, thanks. Thanks for the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I just first want to say that it's absolutely beautiful. The music is fantastic. I've done a whole bunch of singing in my life, and just the tone and quality of her voice is so mature. If you told me it was a 17-year-old at first, I definitely would not have had any clue. It was very surprising to me. And I just had a general comment. I recently was down in Tennessee at a big music festival called Bonnaroo, and I could just totally imagine myself sitting on a lawn with 80,000 other people, the sun shining down on us, everybody having a good time, and then Sonia's music coming on over the air and over the crowds and just swarming among us, and it would be totally fitting. It would be perfectly in place. And you have to understand that some of the bigger names like Tom Petty and Beck and Mo and all of these other bands play there. So I think you have a lot of potential. I hope everything goes well for you.
Well, thanks, Seth.
Thank
Appreciate
you
the
so
call.
Much.
What about the idea of performing live? I know you do. I've seen you perform live. What's the difference? I mean, what do you like that relative to compared to recording?
I love performing live. That's what I live for, you know. It's funny because I will be at Bonnaroo next year, actually.
Oh, good. So you'll have a chance to play before 80,000 people or whatever.
Maybe not 80,000, but I will be there. I absolutely love performing because I love when it's a good show. It's unlike anything else. It's that relationship between the audience and the performer and the energy. It's so fulfilling. It's just really this wonderful high.
Well, could we get you to do something else? I think you were going to do the song. And maybe it's the song Train, and before you do it, could you just talk a little bit about it?
Well, Train is one I wrote a little while ago, almost probably 2 years ago now, which for me is a very long time ago for songs because I write so many. And I wrote this song right when I started getting involved with the industry, and there was this one particular label that was really interested in signing me. And they were pretty much, the deal was done, and lawyers were talking, and I wrote this song feeling both excited and a little bit freaked out by it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the idea that, you know, you're on this train and it's moving and you can't really stop it. And you're just on this ride and you want it to go faster and you want to get there, but you kind of want it to slow down a little bit. And so those are the lyrics in the song, and that's what it's about.
Okay, Sonia Kitchell singing Train from her album Words Came Back to Me.
I've just taken a seat on the train. I walk through busy streets down a shadowy lane. I just bought my ticket for the ride. There's no turning back now, no matter what I decide. slow down. My body quivers with anticipation for what lies ahead. Wood is thrown onto the fire that cries out to be fed. Mist shrouds the dawn, so ahead I cannot see. And the train moves ever forward into the misty sea. There are so many faces, but most of the time I feel so alone. There are so many places. Will I ever stop and know my own home? But I'm not sure when, nor do I know where I'm going, so I won't pretend. Can I see beyond the horizon or around the bend? The train it moves ever forward without a seeming end. Through the other, and I felt the warm sun's rays. The wind it gently blew across my weary shoulders, and time whispered in my ear, child, you're just gonna keep getting older. But I've done nothing more than take a seat on. My life turned upside down, and only the little things remain.
That's Sonia Kitchell singing Train off of her new album, Words. Her debut album, Words, came back to me. So nice, Sonia. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Picking up on the theme of that song, it seems like there's a part of you that's worried about all this might be going a little too fast for you. Is there someone that sort of counsels you in your life, your parents, for example, who say, now, hang on, Sonia, you know, you're doing great. You're going to be a wonderful performer. You are a wonderful singer, but take it easy. Get off that train. Slow down. Be a kid a little longer.
Oh, I've got plenty of people counseling me. and I did write that song 2 years ago also. And I do feel like now things are going at a really good pace. But they're definitely, you know, no matter where we are in life and no matter who we are and what our life is, there is this feeling of excitement and anticipation and a little bit of fear, too, because, you know, it's scary. The unknown is scary and life is the unknown.
Mm. Sonia, we have just enough time in this last break to get to one more song, which I'd love to do. I think you're going to do Can't Get You Out of My Mind.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific.
I can't get you. So drugged by your love, I don't even know the time. For all that I can do, is say that I
hard so hard to stop thinking about you, baby. For a little while, I'll just forget about you, baby. But to call me, baby. Please do something, honey, 'cause I got to know what you're thinking of. And I said,
this is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We'll be back after a short break.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at bicon.com, bicon.com. And RHR International, an executive and organizational development firm committed to integrating executives into new roles.
This This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks, and for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking with a young singer and songwriter, Sonia Kitchell, this hour. We're hearing her perform live here in the studio. Her debut album is called Words Came Back to Me. You can join our conversation. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to Sonia Kitchell. And Sonia, just before the break, we heard wonderful song, Can't Get You Out of My Mind, where you really turn up the heat and turn off the cell phone. It's okay. It's the hazards of live radio. It's happened to all of us. Don't worry about
turning it. Turning it off right now. I can't believe that just happened.
Hey, it's happened to me in hearings on Capitol Hill, so it can happen anywhere.
Okay.
Don't worry about it. Tell me about that song, though, Can't Get You Out of Your Mind. The sort of bluesy passion of that just came through loud and clear. I loved it.
Well, you know, it's an angst-filled love song, and I was really deeply infatuated with this guy and very in love with him, I wouldn't say in love with him because I was 15, so I don't know if I really knew if I really know what love is, but and it's just...
So what happened? I mean, you were just about to tell the story about it. So deeply infatuated with this guy.
I was deeply infatuated with this guy, and it's a funny story. And then a week later, I wrote another song about him called Rejected, because that's exactly what happened. And, you know, what can I say? And the thing about that song is I love people, and I fall in love with a lot of people very easily. So it's a song that I can sing about a lot of different guys. And I have sung about a lot of different guys.
Well, the passion in it is just superb. I think we have time for you to do one more song. We're talking about No Matter What?
Yes.
Is that right? Tell us a bit about it.
Well, No Matter What is a song I don't actually normally talk about or even think about the meaning of this song, because it started to... once again, it can be applied to a lot of different situations, but this song in particular in this situation was really... I was at a club... watching some of my friends play, and I saw this girl I knew in the back, and she was, you know, one of the popular girls at school, mm-hmm. that kind of deal, but she was really messed up on drugs that night, and it was really clear that her life was not so great, and I just saw that, and nobody else really was, she was in the back, and no one really even noticed what was going on with her, and it really struck me, and I really felt bad for her, and so I wrote this song, because I felt like what she needed, although she had lots of friends, is she really needed someone to be paying attention to her and be giving her the time of day. So, you know.
Okay, well, here is Sonia Kitchell live with the song No Matter What off of her CD, Words Came Back to Me.
She's a crazy. She needs an intervention. She has lost her world, and no one dares to mention. She just needs someone to help her out. She needs someone to say, hey, what's this all about? She needs a little bit of love and care, and most of all, she needs someone to say, I will be there for you, no matter what you do, I'll be there for you, no matter what you say, I'll be there today, no matter what you do, I'll be there for you, yeah. A lonely girl who needs some attention. She needs to find someone to put in place prevention. She needs a burden that will hold her and not tear. And most of all, she needs someone to say, I will be there for you no matter what you do. I'll be there for you, no matter what you say. I'll be there today, no matter what you do. I'll be there for you, yeah. on her own. Everyone was laughing and dancing, but she was all alone. When I saw her, eyes were so sweet, and her smile had gone away. She was hard on strife and degrading life, and that was what I heard them say. Now she's a frightened girl who needs good intention. She needs, she's been lost too long, and she needs some direction. She needs someone to say, darling, it's okay. Someone who actually cares about a day. Don't you know, don't you know, she needs a little bit of love and care. And most of all, she needs someone to say,
Sonia Kitchell singing No Matter What from her debut CD, Words Came Back to Me. Sonia Kitchell, thank you so much for coming in today, and thanks for playing. It's been wonderful.
Thanks so much for having us.
We've really, really appreciated it. We've been talking this hour with singer-songwriter Sonia Kitchell. Her debut album is called Words Came Back to Me. She's been touring the country recently, and tonight will be in Long Island, then moves on to Connecticut, Canada, Woodstock, New York, Chicago, and by the end of July will be playing at the Central Park Summer Stage in New York City. See her if you can. Sonia, thanks again, and thank you, guitarist John Shannon, for being here as well. Really appreciate it. We'll go out of this segment with a little more music from Sonia Kitchell. This song is called Words. And in a moment, a lesson in backyard grilling for the 4th of July. This is On Point.
Oh, the things on the rack you placed most of the time. Words took me down the wrong track, and now I want to take it back, so I run away. If only I could be free of the plague that my words seem to be, I'd thank the day. For I seem to say all the wrong things on the right day, and I seem to do all the wrong things on the right cue, at least most of the time. Such a give or take. Some laugh while they're dying, some cry when they wake. But there are some words that I could never do without. That paint pictures on polished walls.
Fourth of July is now so close you can almost taste it. To prepare, I visited recently with a master griller for a lesson. I'm here in the backyard of Cambridge, Massachusetts chef Stephen Johnson. Usually you'll find him running the kitchen at the Rendezvous restaurant in Cambridge, but today he's here to help us celebrate the summer and the shrine of American summer food, the grill. As people across the country fire up their grills and barbecues for the 4th of July weekend, we've asked Steve for some expert guidance and for some ideas about some old favorites and some new surprises. And Stephen Johnson, thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Anthony.
So, Stephen, let's just jump right in, and let's talk first about what kind of fire you have and what kind of fire you're about to start up for us here.
Well, we've got the standard 28-inch round Weber backyard grill, and I'm a dyed-in-the-wool live fire cooker, so we're going to build a regular charcoal fire and let it rip.
What are we going to be grilling today?
First, I wanted to do a kind of an appetizer-style dish, which is grilled hard-shelled clams or little necks in a broth, and then we're going to follow that up with some spiced-up sirloin steaks.
Wow, sounds great.
So the charcoal has caught fire inside the chimney fire starter cylinder here, and we're going to dump it onto the coals.
Already you can feel that blast of charcoal-heated air.
I'm going to use a grill brush here to clean it off. You want to make sure that, you know, this week's sirloin doesn't taste like last week's bluefish or whatever.
For those listening to us in parts of the country where little neck clams might not even be known, let alone available, why don't you talk, what are they? What are we talking about here?
In the Northeast here, we've got a long tradition of serving hard shell clams, which are a summer treat for us. And little necks are about 2 inches across. There are smaller ones that are called count necks, and then it gets to be cherry stones, and then the large ones are called quahogs or cow chokers or something like that. While the fire is building, I am going to prepare the broth that is going to be used for serving the little neck clams.
So you're going to do the broth right on the grill. I see.
Got these inexpensive foil pans. That way you're not, like, ruining your best sauté skillet that you got as a wedding gift.
What you've done is throw some white onions chopped very coarsely into this foil pan, and you've drizzled probably about a half a cup of olive oil all over them.
That's right.
And here comes the garlic.
I'm going to chop a couple of cloves of garlic and throw them in there, too. And we're going to add a little bit of water to it.
We've got some Spanish paprika and some salt and pepper just went in.
That's right.
And some fresh thyme and rosemary is about to go in.
And we'll be in pretty good shape.
And in a place like this, we're in a very pretty backyard in Cambridge, not far from downtown Boston. I mean, what does it add? You know, imagine that there are a group of friends here and you're cooking for a bunch of people and we've got this fire sort of in the middle of it.
I think ever since, you know, there's been this kind of aspect of conviviality about the fire coming and building, and people tend to gather around the grill. They're fascinated by the fire, and that's where people tend to gather, I think. The smoke that's coming off of these charcoals right now, I think it starts to set the appetite a little bit and builds the anticipation of what's going to come after.
I think that's already happening.
So now I've got my couple of dozen nice little neck clams here that have been carefully scrubbed. They were dug up yesterday, and they are ready for grilling. So simplest thing possible, technique-wise, is to take the clams
right on the grill
and put them right onto the grill.
And you're putting them right on the hottest part of the fire, too, it looks like. So what are you waiting for here? There's one that's just opened up. I assume that's what you're waiting for.
You just answered your own question there. They pop open. I give it a little bit of encouragement, and I drop it right into the simmering broth. That was a beautiful one. It just opened up right before our eyes like magic. We can actually pick them up with our fingers and eat the clams right out of the shell and throw the empty shells into the neighbor's backyard.
You can taste the herbs. Mm, so nice.
Yeah, the herb flavor really comes through.
True confessions. I'm not a big clam fan, but I love this. I love this. It's really good. And it's all about the broth. And now it's on to the steaks.
Got a couple of nice sirloin steaks that I'm going to season with a little salt and pepper.
Okay, now I'm interested in this because there are a lot of theories about this kicking around, and it's good to run this by a real chef, but for the longest time, I've heard that you don't put salt on a steak because it pulls the juices out of them. Not true.
Not true in the short term.
So you wouldn't want to salt them up, say, at noon for a grill that's going to happen at 5 or 6.
That's exactly right, because then you'll have enough time to have the salt actually draw moisture out of the interior of the steak. And one of the other negative consequences of that is that you get water, that moisture, is on the surface of the steak. In essence, it will result in a kind of a steamed steak.
Covered them with salt, and when I mean cover them, you really put quite a handful of salt on there, and then you put lots of fresh pepper. And what's the brown spice?
The brown spice is a spice mix that I used at the restaurant. It's modeled after a North African style spice mix. Mm. It's cumin, coriander, there's a little paprika, a little chili powder, but also some sweet spices that we normally associate with dessert cooking. I'm talking about, in this one, cinnamon and allspice.
And the fire seems to be cooperating. You've still got a white-hot fire, but no flames. So these, you don't want this, well, just a little flame kind of licking, jumping up and licking the bottom of the steaks.
That's the thing that can happen sometimes. You know, if you don't give your full attention to it, you know, the phone can ring, you've got your steak on, nothing's happening, so you feel like you're safe. You're going to go answer that phone call. Well, as the steaks heat up, some of the fat will start to trickle onto the fire, and that'll cause a little bit of a flare-up. You finish that phone call, which took about 3 minutes rather than two, and you came back out, and your whole kettle was up in flames.
So you just took the steaks off. So can we try them?
Yeah. So we've got a medium rare here and a medium. I made a little harissa sauce for the steaks. It's a puree of ancho peppers and garlic, a little cumin, a little coriander, a shot of vinegar, and some olive oil.
Mm. That is so nice.
Pretty juicy, huh?
Mm. The steak is delicious. Okay, Steve, thanks so much. This has been great.
It's been my pleasure, Anthony. Thanks a lot.
And to read a recipe of Steve's clams, Johnson, and grilled sirloin with Moroccan spices, go to onpointradio.org. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.